would be able to move you further back.
Sure. Is that good?
Much better.
Okay. I have to welcome everyone and thank you for coming. We're going to start Masechta Makos tonight, the Mitzvah Shem. The goal for tonight would be to learn the Mishnah. Look at the first Tosus, a very famous Tosus, and perhaps even learn the first Sugya in the Gemara. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad ha'edim nasim zomimim. Edim zomimim are false witnesses. And they're established as such because the second pair of Edim, called the Mazimim, come in and they testify against the first pair of Edim, Imano Ayisem. Let's just give a little background to this. There's something called Chakiros. We have to know that when two witnesses come to testify in front of a Beis Din, they're subject to investigation. And that investigation is called Chakiros. Chakiros have seven different questions. And the focus of those seven questions is what's called Makom Uzman. Exactly where did it happen and exactly when did it happen? How did you get seven questions from two questions? That's an intelligent question. But the answer is that there are five different questions about the time period, because you have to know what Shemitah it is and what year it's in and what month it's in and what day of the month and what hour of the day and so forth and so on. This process of Chakiros is going to be critical for our discussion, because it's only when the Edim can testify that they saw this at a certain place, a certain time, that they become vulnerable, they become subject to Hazama. The second pair of Edim is going to testify against the first pair of Edim. It's impossible for you to have witnessed this crime or whatever you claim you have seen, because you were with us elsewhere at that time and in that place. So then Chakiris really is going to, on the one hand, it's sort of like a paradox. On the one hand, it's going to set up the first pair of Edim as Edim Ksherim, because without the Chakiris, they haven't passed the litmus test of being Edus. On the other hand, it's going to set them up for a possible Hazoma. And the Mishnah asks the question, Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim, meaning through what process do we establish that the first pair of Edim are Shakronim? Because after all, how do you know whether to believe the first pair of Edim or the second pair of Edim? But there's a process which is specified by the Torah, which is called Hazama. And that process, when it's placed into motion, will guarantee that the first pair of Edim are Zomimim. They lie, they purge themselves, and testify falsely. Why? Meaning, why is it such that the second pair of Edim, since they testify, Imanu Ayisem, they're believed, and the first pair of Edim are established as Zomimim? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. We discussed it last week as an introduction to Masechta Makos. But the bottom line that we have to know moving forward is that the second pair of Edim are believed and the first pair are not. And the Torah says two things about the first pair of Edim. Once they're established as Zomimim, first and foremost, their Edus is completely null and void, because it's established as Edus Sheker. Secondly, Kasher Zomam, we're going to punish the first pair of Edim in what I call, just for lack of another term, the mechanics of it is a boomerang theory. I don't know, that's probably an American term. But boomerang means when you throw something against... Or we borrowed it from a different hemisphere. I don't know. Anyway, when you throw something against the wall and it bounces back, that's called a boomerang. And that's what happens to the Edim. Call it Mida Keneged Mida if you like. So the Edim are going to be punished exactly in the same way that they accuse the Nidon of being punished. In the case that the Mishnah is going to present, we cannot use the normal mechanics of Hazama, meaning the Kasher Zomam is not in place. We cannot boomerang back to the Edim exactly what they wanted to give to the Nidon. We don't know why, and we're going to have to figure that out. But when the Mishnah says, Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim, paradoxically it does not answer that question. And that's going to bother the Gemara. Instead of answering that question, the Mishnah is going to answer a different question. Ketzad eina edim nasim zomimim. Meaning, in what situation do we suspend the normal process and mechanics of Hazama? And instead of applying the principle of Asisim lo kasher zomam and punishing the edim, We have to find a different way of punishing the Eidim. So let's read the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Me'idim anu bishplonishu ben grusha o ben chalutza. Ein omrim, we shouldn't say, as the Torah would seem to say literally if interpreted kipshuto, ye asa ze ben grusha ben chalutza taktov. Notice the Mishnah speaks in the singular term, because the Torah itself speaks in the singular. Vehine eid sheker ha'eid. But the eid here, even though it's formulated by the Torah in the singular, is referring to two eidim. So we do not say what we would have anticipated we should say, that the Eidim Zomim should become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Tachtov. Now, Rabosai, what sense would it have made, even as a Havam, you know, that the Eidim would become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? The halachic status of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is only relevant to whom? To a Kohen. A Kohen becomes disqualified, which means he can't serve in the Mikdash, he can't receive Matnas Kahuna, he doesn't get Truma. It means he's allowed to enter into a cemetery, B'mitame L'meisim. All those dinim, once the Kohen is established as a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, disqualified as a Cholol, he's desecrated his Kedushas Kahuna, all those dinim are suspended. But how can we apply that to the Eidim, even as a Havamina, unless we assume what? That they're also called. So Rashi adds the two words here, which you'll see on the beginning of the fourth line from the top, Vehem Kohanim. The Mishnah is using a Lashon Katzar, a Lashon Katzara, by omitting a very important piece of information, namely that the Eidim are Kohanim.
Starting point of that and the original cut of
Eidim
was the same. That's what Rashi's trying to emphasize.
That both pairs of Eidim. No, not both pairs of Eidim. I made a mistake. That the first pair of Eidim and the Nidon are all Kohen. Correct? The second pair of Eidim is irrelevant. But isn't it a little bit odd that the Mishnah omitted that fact? You know, but that's the Lashon Katzara of the Mishnah, because again, it's ridiculous, says Rashi, to even entertain the possibility that the Eidim Zomimim would be given the status of Ben Grusha and Chalutz if they're not Kohanim. What bearing would it have if they're not Kohanim? Last time I checked, the Yisrael who's not a Kohen is not allowed to do the Avod in any event. He cannot receive Truma, nor is he enjoined from entering into a cemetery. So none of the laws of disqualification of Kohuna would be relevant to a Yisrael. Until the Meiri comes along, and the Meiri says, no, the Eidim are not Kohanim, the Eidim are Yisraelim. No, so what relevance does it have? So he says the following, that the law is that a Cholol, that's a disqualified Kohen, if he has relations with a woman, the woman becomes disqualified for Kohuna. She becomes a Cholol through the Bia itself. So there was a Havamina to say that the Eidim should get the status of a Cholol, Le'inyan, postling their wives, or I should say their wives in plural, but since the respect, I mean the two Eidims are two wives, but to Kohuna. Fascinating Chiddush of the Meiri. Do you hear it? Let's go over it one more time, for my sake. The Meiri says that there was a Havamina that even if the Eidim are Yisraelim, they would suffer the punishment of Kasher Zomam by giving them a, we'll call it a quasi-status of Chalolim, of disqualified, such that a Cholol passels his wife through Bia to Kohuna. And therefore, they would no longer be allowed to live with their wives unless their wives are willing to exclude themselves forevermore from marrying a Kohen.
So it would be anyway.
What do you mean?
But
if he dies, he can marry a Kohen. So now, even after the father, even after the husband dies, his wife will never be allowed to marry a Kohen. Why? Because her former husband, her ex, her late husband, we should call him, not the ex, but the late husband is a Cholol. What do you mean he's a Cholol? He's not even a Kohen. But the answer is he has one din of a Cholol. But see, why do you think Rashi would reject this? You could say that Rashi didn't think of it, but that's not the way I was trained to understand Rashi. You know? Why did Rashi balk? Why was he inhibited vis-a-vis this pshat of the Meiri?
Because we're talking about the Eidim.
What did he say?
Because it's not Kasher Zomam. It's not really equal.
Because what?
It's because they were trying to hurt this Kohen a lot that he was losing mamash.
Good.
Well, this guy has a little technicality.
Okay, good. Can someone say it even a little better than that?
But it's him. It's not his family. It's not the extended.
Excellent. What else?
It's a positive thing for him because he's pretty.
I don't know how positive. You mean he doesn't want his wife to ever get married to a Kohen? I don't know. That's a deep philosophical question. I don't want to get into that. That's like, if a man is married, what does he want his wife to do after he dies? Okay, let's not get into that. We don't like to think in those terms. But no, your answers are excellent, because the problem with the Me'iri, although the Me'iri has a tremendous benefit in that he avoids this dochak that the Mishnah is talking about, a case with the Edom HaKohen, and the Mishnah failed to mention that fact. But on the other hand, the drawback is that to imagine that the kasher zomam to the edim zomamim would express itself in one din, which is, as I would say, a minor din on the list of disqualifications of kahuna and the status of a cholo, do we have a kasher zomam mechanism that would take one nikuda, one spark of a long list of dinim, and allow us to apply that through the kasher zomam halach? And that, my friends, Rabosai, is going to be a subject of our discussion as we go along to talk about other cases. Can we take the kasher zomam and break down the package into its component parts and choose and pick and choose? Certain parts of the package will not apply to the Edom, but others nevertheless will. Alright, are you with me on that? Make a mental note of that as we come back. In any event, how do the Edom know to testify that this individual is a Ben Grusha and a Ben Chalutza? So let's go back to Rashi. Rashi says the following. Shehu Ben Grusha.
Before you carry on, Rabbi, if the mission asks the question, Kates are the Edom, the mission is talking about the Edom themselves. The mission is not talking about their spouses. So if the Me'iri comes up with a possible solution...
Right, yeah, that was one of the answers that were mentioned, that it's very strange that the one single din that we're going to impose on the Kohen is not really relevant, on the Israel, the aid, is not really relevant to the aid himself, it's relevant to his wife. Okay.
According to Rashi's chat, if the Edom are actually the aid, would they get Malkus in this case?
I think they would, but that we'll see in Tosfos. You know, where does the Malkus come in here? But let's look at Rashi here just to figure out what is the exact mechanics by which two Edom determine that Ploni HaKohen is really a Ben Grusha. Rashi says, Bifanenu nizgarsha imo kodim shenolat. Now, if you take Rashi literally, does that make a bit of sense? Why not? There's no psul, because let's say the Leda took place on Tuesday and she got the get on Monday, one day earlier. The child is not a Ben Grusha. The Ben Grusha status is set and fixed at the time of Hiroyon. And that's if you take a look on the side here, they tell you to look at the Tosfos Yontif on Mishnayos. The Tosfos Yontif points out that you can't take Rashi literally at face value. Rashi can't mean that the testimony is that she received a get the day before her childbirth, because that would not disqualify the child as a Ben Grusha. The bia itself, which led to hirayon, which led to pregnancy, had to have taken place between a Kohen and a Grusha. So in effect, what these Edom would have to testify is the following: that we saw the bia take place after she got the get. In other words, or alternatively, maybe I'm going a little bit too extreme, we know the date of the get, and we know, by calculating the months of pregnancy and birth, we know that this child was conceived subsequent to the delivery of the get to his mother by this Kohen. So we have two critical time periods. We'll call it T1 and T2. At time T1, she received a get. At time T2, she had a relationship with this Kohen that led to the birth of this child. So by definition, the Edom would have to testify on a date, says the Tosfos Yontif, of Gerishin, Bifaneinu Nizgarsha Imo, Kodem HaHiroyon. Comes along the Rashash in the back, one of the boys in the back, and the Rashash says that even the Tosfos Yontif can't be taken literally. Why? Because from Bia until Hirayon, we need Dr. Oh, he's not here tonight. It could take up to 72 hours until conception actually takes place. So it's not enough just to tell me that the Bia took place on a certain day. You also have to calculate and take into consideration a 3-day period to make sure that the Hirayon itself took place when she was a Grusha. In any event, Rashi tells us what happened. So Tosis asks here a very fascinating question. And we're going to change the order of Tosis here because I think it's very important that we start with the end of Tosis. V'yesh l'dagdik. Or if you're counting up from the bottom of Tosis, if you can count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom of Tosis. V'yesh l'dagdik. Amilo nokat, why didn't the Mishnah take the following case? Me'idim anu bish plonish u'mamzer. And what's the advantage of mamzer? My mamzer is actually in worse shape than a chalal. A mamzer could hardly marry anybody. Who's a mamzer allowed to marry? Only a mamzeris or a giyaris. That's all you're left with. Maybe a shivcha. Yeah, we can encourage. You know, and then he should be mashachar the shivcha, and the children are tahorim. But we don't. We never saw that in our time. In any event, dezelo shayach. Dizeh havashayach bein b'Yisrael bein b'kohanim uben grusha lo pasil ella b'kohanim. So by the Mishnah choosing the case of ben grusha, in a sense it's whittling down, it's severely circumscribing the scope of this case. It's limited to the kohanim situation, but why not expand it beyond Sheva Kahuna to encompass every single Jew and let the Edom testify that so and so is a mamzer? And Tosis comes up with a very technical answer to this question. V'yesh li yashev denakte, why does he mention ben grusha ben chalutza mishum dekoy? Because this Mishnah is it's a continuation, it's a tag on to the last Mishnah, Masech the Sanhedrin, which means if you take out Perek HaChelek, okay, that's an issue. But if you go back to the ninth Perek of Sanhedrin, it says there, zomime bas kohen ubala. The Mishnah there addresses the case of Zomimim of a Bas Kohen. In other words, the Edom testified against the Bas Kohen that she had a Bias Nus. And the question is which punishment we should mete out to the Edom Zomimim. Whether it's Srefa or Chenek, because the Boel gets one punishment, and if Ellis gets another, Bas Kohen gets a more severe punishment. Which punishment should we mete out to the... So since the last Mishnah Masech the Sanhedrin picks up the case of Kahuna, is therefore kach nok to me the deshayach b'kahuna. Good. This is what I call a symmetry answer. You know, the Mishnah likes to be, it's a literary kind of plug here for symmetry, for similarity, and so forth. The Ramban gives a different answer. Says the Ramban, and maybe we'll get a chance to look at it in the page if you got it out, because the Ritva quotes the Ramban. Says the Ramban, you know what? A ben grusha ben chalutza is more shriach than a mamzer. It's more common of a situation that arises than a mamzer. Now, I don't know exactly what the Ramban means here. Is the Ramban willing to take a statistical survey and tell us that there are more chalolim, meaning psulei kuna on the face of the earth, than there are psulei kahal? What we call psul kahal means a mamzer shaloyom b'kal Hashem. Or maybe what the Ramban has in mind, he doesn't spell it out, is that to get testimony on a mamzer is very, very difficult. In fact, it's so complicated that the Pnei Yoshua claims that the reason why our Mishnah could not address the case of Me'idin Anubish Plonishu Mamzer is because the Mishnah couldn't even imagine such edus. That's what the Pnei Yeshua says.
Why is that?
Says the Pnei Yeshua, I'm going to give you two choices. Okay, one choice is that they saw a woman who's a Pnuya, right, who's not married, and she had a relationship with an erva. Let's say the two Edom testify that we saw her having relations with a close relative. We'll get to Eishes Ishes as a second possibility.
Her brother.
What do you say?
It's her brother.
Okay. I don't like to spell it out because I can't even imagine these things.
No.
But let's say with an erva. Says the Pnei Yeshua, the child is not a mamzer. What does that mean? So here you have to know a sugi ksubas, which the Pnei Yeshua invokes. Kishem shezinso imzer kach zinso macherim. When it comes to a case of a pnuya, we don't know who the father of the child is. She may have had indeed one relationship with an erva, and if the child was a result of that relationship, the child is a mamzer. But who's to guarantee that in a very short period of time, within that same span of time, she didn't have a relationship with someone else who was not an erva to her? And therefore, the eidim would not be able to establish that the child was a mamzer. Yeah. Let's go on to choice number two. Ah, this is a better case. She's a married woman, correct? An Eishes Ish, and she had beer with another man. Doesn't that, by definition, make the child into a mamzer? Says the Pnei Yeshua, even that you don't know. Why not? Correct, because Rov Bi'il is another sugi, a different sugi in Kedushin and in other places. Rov Bi'il o sachar ba'al. Of course, technically speaking, the Baal is not allowed to have relations with her, but he doesn't know. What?
Presumably.
Okay. We won't go into the details about that, Shmuel, because, you know, in present company, we don't like to discuss these things. But Rov Bi'il o sachar ba'al. It becomes even more complicated because there's also a possibility, unless the Eidim know exactly who the Baal is, because very often the Eidim know that the Baal was not her husband, but they don't know whether he was a Jew or a non-Jew. And that complicates matters even further because Akbar Baal Basi so we pass the flat as a kosher, he's not a mamzer. So in any event, the Pnei Yeshua comes to the conclusion that the Mishnah omitted the case of mamzer not because it was an extension of the last Mishnah Sanhedrin the way Tosfos would have it, and not because it's lo shchiach the way the Ramban would have it, although there may be a close proximity between the Pnei Yeshua and the Ramban, but rather because it's impossible. You cannot have eidus that someone is a mamzer. So who pounces upon the Pnei Yeshua? I don't know if you've ever heard of the Aruch Laner. The Aruch Laner was a German Rav about two centuries ago. Ettlinger was his name. I think you could have taken his brain and made two Einsteins out of him. He's unbelievable. What did he say? He was a Rebbe of Rav Hirsch. He was Rav Shimshon Far Hirsch's Rebbe. And he himself studied philosophy in university. In the year 1820, he had to leave because of anti-Semitism. Now, German anti-Semitism is very ancient, almost as old as British anti-Semitism. Not quite, but close. But anyway, okay, I got off on a tangent here. So what does the Aruch Laner say? The Aruch Laner says the following. The Tosefta here at the beginning of Makkos lists all the cases of Eidus Hazama, where you cannot implement the law of Kasha Zomam literally, and on the list is Me'idim Anu Alish Plodi Shemamzerhu. So Pnei Yeshua, you want to tell me that there is no such Eidus? You go work it out with the Tosefta. The Tosefta says explicitly there is such a case. Says the Aruch Laner, if two Eidim testify about a person's mother or a person's father, that their parent, that the parent of this child was muchzak lanu b'mamzerus, we know that this child, or for example, says the Aruch Laner, listen to this case. This will be interesting to you. There's a halacha called Yakir. It's a gemara in many places in Shas and in Yesh Nochlim, that a father is believed to testify either that this is his son or that this is not his son. Even if it means declaring this young boy as a mamzer. So if two eidim come forward and say that we heard this father testify in our presence about his son, that he's a mamzer, the child is a mamzer. Until the eidim becomes zomimim. Because how could you say you heard him say that he declared his son is a mamzer yakir in such a place, such a time? You're with us elsewhere. So the Aruch HaNer has no problem with constructing a mitzius of the Edim on a bishplonish of mamzer, and they become Edim Zom. So then why doesn't the Mishnah have a case of me'idim on a bishplonish of mamzer? So before we reveal the teretz of the Aruch HaNer, I wanted to share with you an idea that I had, if it's okay with the oil. Perhaps we could give the following answer. If two Edim testify that so-and-so is a mamzer, and there's a havamina in our Mishnah that the Edim should become, under the law of Kasha Zomam, they should take on the status of a mamzer, I want to ask the following question. Who could the Edim marry? Which woman would qualify as a candidate for marriage for these Edim? Right, you'll tell me a mamzeres or a gioris. It can't be a mamzeres. I'll tell you why. Because the Edim are claiming that their testimony is true. And therefore, they are not mamzerim through the law of Kasha Zoma. Does anybody know what that's called in halacha when somebody says about themselves something that's against what Beis Din says, but yet as far as themselves are concerned, they are believed? Not exactly. It's called Shavya Anafshei Chaticha Disura. Meaning, you could testify that the shechita of this animal was a shechita kshera. I know it's not a shechita kshera. Everyone in the world could partake of the meat and have a mango, but I can't eat of that meat because I know it's awesome. That's called Shavya Nafshe. Therefore, the dinim of Mamzerus, as they apply to the Edim, put the Edim in a situation where I don't know who they could marry. The only possibility I can think of is maybe a Gioris. Okay, we'll think about that. Let's think about Gioris for a moment. But certainly they could not marry Mamzerim. And I'll tell you something else. In Rashi's case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, where Rashi says that the Edim were Kohanim, would in the Havamina, applying the rule of Kashazom to the Edim and disqualifying them, would the Edim be allowed to enter into a cemetery? Again, a Kohen is Muzar on Tumas Mes. He can't go into a cemetery. These Kohanim are Kohanim Cherim Lishitasam, right? Because again, they're claiming that they were not Zomim, they're not false testimony. And therefore, their Kedushas Kahuna is intact. Would we allow them to enter into a Beis HaKvaris? And once again, I think we should apply the principle of Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Disura. As far as the Kohanim are concerned, they're not psulim. So again, you want to enjoin them from eating truma. You want to enjoin them from doing avodah. That I understand. That comes under the law of Kasha Zomim, if only we could apply Kasha Zomim. But if you want to allow them as a Kohen Pasul to enter into a Beis HaKvaris like a Chol is allowed to, that would come under Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Disura. Okay. Let's hear what the Aruch HaNer has to say.
Are you claiming now that that's going to start? It's not going to be kasher. The mamzer is too strict now. That's your dilemma.
That's right, because the mamzer himself is allowed to marry mamzeres, but the Edim wouldn't be allowed to marry mamzeres. So paradoxically, you've imposed upon the Edim a more severe punishment than the Edim themselves.
Yeah, but that section of the punishment is that they're taking it upon themselves.
Okay, so that's a good question. In other words, do we see Shavya Nafshi? It's like Iyudi Afsed Anafshi. You know, he himself injured himself. That's what I want to study with you. But first, let me tell you what the Aruch HaNer says. The Aruch HaNer says that the reason why the Mishnah is focused on Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is because there's an unbelievable chiddush here in this Mishnah that we would not know from Mamzer, and that is Ben Chalutza. The Torah says that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Grusha. The Torah does not say that a Kohen is enjoined from marrying a Chalutza. The psul of Chalutza l'kahuna is only derabbanan. And many Rishonim will claim, and we'll see this in the Ramban, that Ben Chalutza doesn't belong in this Mishnah. We're not going to erase it, because whenever the Mishnah mentions Ben Grusha, automatically it mentions Ben Chalutza. It's a tag on. It's like horse and buggy. But it really has nothing to do with Ben Chalutza. The Ramban is of the opinion that in the case of two Eidim who testify against the Kohen that he's a Ben Chalutza, the Eidim did not violate the Issur Torah of false Eidus, which is called Osana Breach Eid Shaker. I'm not going to point anywhere. And it's only Derabbanan. The Psul is only Derabbanan. So on a Doraisa level, what did they do? Comes along the Aruch Laner, and watch the chutzpah here, that the Aruch Laner is taking on the Ramban. Well, if he wants to attack the Pnei Yeshua Nicha, the Pnei Yeshua was 100 years before the Aruch Laner. But now he's taking on the Ramban from 8 centuries earlier. He says the following, that in the case of Ben Chalutza, the Edim are chayev for violating a lav de oraisa of lo sana briach et shoker, and for the violation of that lav de oraisa, they will suffer malchus, 39 lashes de oraisa, despite the fact that Ben Chalutza is only a psul de rabbana. How could it be? Says the Aruch Laner, what difference does it make whether you're talking about a Ben Grusha, which is a Psul D'Oraisa, or Ben Chalutza, Psul D'Rabbanan? At the end of the day, the Edom, not the Edom, the Nidon, is going to suffer the same consequences. He will not be able to do the Avodah, he will not receive Truma, he will, all the Dinim, all the rights of Kahuna will be robbed, will be stolen from him, illegitimately, if the Edom are telling, are perjuring themselves, whether or not the Psul is D'Oraisa, D'Rabbanan. So therefore the Aruch Laner insists that the Mishnah wants to give us Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza in order to mechadish the following. Don't define the law of Kasher Zomam in terms of D'Oraisa D'Rabbanan. Define the term, the impact of Kasher Zomam according to the repercussions, halacha l'mais, in the practical sense. Whatever the Nidon is meant to suffer practically as a result of this perjury, that comes under the law of Losana and Kashazomam D'Oraisa, even if those repercussions are D'Rabbanan. Because we look at the Lamaisa, at the practical implications. What does the Ramban hold? Isn't the Aruch Laner intuitively correct? Don't all answer at once. I mean, somebody's got to come forward and defend the Ramban, you know. Aaron? I think the Ramban is defining Haggadas Edus as an abstract concept. The Torah says Lo Sana Briacha Eid Shoker. The Torah is referring to Edus. Edus, it has a halachic status of its own. Says the Ramban, forget about the practical implications. That's not what's going on here in the parasha. What we need to do is define the Edus. If I can use a brisket terminology, we need a chalos Edus. It's a halachic status of an Edus. Ben Grusha on a Doraisa level is not an Edus. Das hastened can Haggadah, we would say in Yiddish. It's not a Haggadah. Because the Edus or the Ben Chalutza is irrelevant to the Torah. The Torah never recognizes such an Edus. So whereas the Aruch Laner is willing to define Losana and Kasher Zomam from a tangible, practical perspective, what would have been implemented, what would have been the repercussions and the hefsed that the Nidah would have suffered, and therefore it makes no matter, doesn't make a bit of a difference whether it's the Raisa as a Psul Ben Grusha or the Rabban as a Psul Chalutza. The Ramban, on the other hand, is looking and analyzing Eidus from an abstract perspective. Does the Torah recognize this Eidus? And here the Ramban says another answer to the question as to why Mamzer was omitted from the Mishnah. His first answer, as you remember, is that Eidus al Mamzer is Lo Shchiyah. But his second answer is much more fundamental. Says the Ramban, there's an incredible Chiddush in our Mishnah which would not have been understood had the Mishnah addressed the case of Mamzer, namely, that we don't fulfill Kasha Zama even as far as Hefseid Mammon is concerned. Now let's understand. A Kohen has certain rights that are worth something. What are those rights called? Matnas Kahuna. Chavdal and Matnas Kahuna. Let's talk about Truma. Now, I don't know how wealthy the Kohen is going to get by receiving Truma, but it's definitely got a value to it. So you want to tell me that we can't, it's impossible to disqualify the Edim Zomimim as, even if they're Kohenim, let's say according to Rashi, as B'nai Grusha, B'nai Chalutza. You can't disqualify them. But Chach, what about the other part of Kasha Zoma? Why not force the Edim Zomimim to pay up to the Kohenim, to these Kohenim, the Nidon, at least for the monetary loss they suffered? Because once they're disqualified as Kohenim, they can no longer receive Truma. Does everybody hear the Ramban's question? Says the Ramban, the Chiddush of our Mishnah is that even as far as Didi Mominus is concerned, the monetary law, there is no Kasher Zoma. And the Ramban gives three different explanations. Three answers to the question, why don't we force the Edim Zomimim to pay the Kohen for his loss of truth? First answer. What do you say, Aaron? Oh, excellent. The Ramban suggests that it is something that's dovar she'eino katsu. We cannot put a price tag on it. Okay, we'll come back to that answer in a moment. Then the Ramban says the second answer. Not only can we not exactly put a price tag on it, we cannot know for sure that the Kohen would have received truma. That's called in the language of the Sechta Bava Kama, Lav Bari Hezeka. You can only claim damages as a Nizak from me, the Mazik, if I definitely damaged you. Prove that there was a definite certain damage. Here you cannot prove it. You may be the most popular Kohen on the planet today. I shouldn't mention the planet here, but tomorrow, who knows? Maybe you'll lose your pride. If you dip in your popularity, no one's bringing you Truma anymore. That's called Lav Bari Hezeka. Then the Ramban gives a third answer. He says it's Groma Ben Ezekin. He wavers back and forth. For anyone who's familiar with the Ezekin, there's something called Groma and something called Garmia. We could probably spend a half a year trying to figure out the difference. The Ramban wrote a treatise just on this issue. Says the Ramban, even if I'll grant you that the Hefsei Truma that the Kohen is going to suffer is Garmi, but there are many Shitos in the Gemara that you cannot force a person and sue him for Garmi. All that is wonderful. And it makes sense, L'shitaso, according to the Ramban, but... And here I'm going to say over the Chiddush of the Shaar HaMelech, he's one of the great Mefarshei Rambam. He says it won't work out with the Rambam. Do we have a Rambam Hilchos Truma here? Maybe Shmuel, I could trouble you. It's Sefer Zeruah. Yeah. Perek Yud Halacha Yud Beis. The Rambam says in Hilchos Truma, interesting. If a Kohen ate Truma and then was disqualified for Kahuna, I didn't say that exactly properly, and then it was determined that he was pasul for Truma as a Cholol before he ate the Truma, then the owners of the Truma that gave him the Truma can sue him for all the Truma that he ate. Can you imagine the following scenario? I'm just going to dramatize it. A Kohen's been eating Truma for 20 years. And finally we find out he was a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So for 20 years he was illegitimately usurping the Kahuna and eating Truma. He's got to return. Again, we'll wait until the Bailim sue him. But once they sue him in a court of law, he's got to return the value of that Truma. I don't know if he pays inflation or not. For 20 years worth of Achilles Truma. Says the Shara Melech, all the answers of the Ramban will fall by the wayside. If the Ramban is telling us that there's no claim against the Edom Zonim to pay Truma because it's Groma, it's Garmi, it's Lo Bari Azeka, maybe yes, maybe no, how do we evaluate it? All those issues are resolved with one simple answer. Because this Kohen has been eating Truma for the last 20 years. Let him pay up for that. Because that's what the Kohen Nidon would be paying up if the Eidus was an Eidus.
That's retroactive. Once it's retroactive, you can know exactly how much you ate over the 20 years. You can calculate it. Now we're talking not retroactively, but rather proactive.
Shmuel, I can agree with you except for one thing. The Ramban says that there's no Tashlume Mammon in this case. The Ramban says that the Chiddush of our Mishnah Ben Grusha, that's why the Mishnah preferred Ben Grusha to Mamzer, is an unbelievably far-reaching conclusion that there is no Mammon that the Edom have to pay. So if he's answering about future Achilas Truma Nicha, but the Kohen is a Ben Grusha from the day he's born, all the Truma that he ate until now is collectible under the law of Mazik, of Adam HaMazik.
I don't know what it would mean.
Who's ever gave him the truma? If you gave him the truma, if I gave him the truma,
didn't do anything wrong. Gave him the truma.
Yeah, but he lost all that truma. That truma has a value to it. Again, it's not exactly the same value.
Giving the truma is not what he was trying to say out to do.
But again, the Rambam says that you gave a Kohen truma. The Rambam says that if this Kohen is Ben Grusha, you could sue him for damages. So why should the Edom pay for that? Who?
Was he the end of giving
Yoitz? Oh, that's basically. I don't know. That comes under a different question of Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarif Machshava Kemaisa. You understand what I mean? That's a more theological question, but not for us now. I'm just interested in Hilchas Mammon in Din and Ezekiel. You can sue the Kohen for all the truma that he's eaten for all the years. I saw you stating around.
He loses one anyway, though.
What is it?
He can give truma to somebody. I mean, he gave through to this code of having been possible.
Right, no, so that, again, we're not going to get into, this is a complicated issue. This is called Tovus HaNoam Mom. I don't know if you know what that is. In other words, Tovus HaNoam means the fact that a particular Kohen, yeah, I have rights, my rights to choose my Kohen, in this case, I unfortunately chose Ben Grusha and Chalutza.
If you were to say that the...
Tzachi.
Yes, if you were to say that the Edom Zomim now have to pay if they were getting sued, why would they pay the people who provide the truma? Why do they get the money?
That's a general question.
It's not a practical case.
What do you mean, why do they pay? Meaning, are you asking a general question on Zoma?
No.
For example,
you want to say that, according to Rambam, if they should pay as if they were sued.
No, the Rambam is not talking about Edom Zomim. The Rambam is just saying that if Reuven gave Aaron HaKohen Truma, and then Aaron HaKohen turns out to be Ben Grusha, the Rambam says that Reuven will sue Aaron HaKohen, and he'll have to pay for the Truma that he ate. I'm just taking this Rambam, it's not me, the Shara Melech, is taking this Rambam,
trying to apply it.
And he's applying it to the case of Edom Zomim.
So I'll say why you can't apply it. Because in a private case, if one is an Edom Zomim, and then he's found to have to pay, right, as if he were being sued for all the truma, who would he be paying it for? It's not a private case. The money has to be a trail of where the money.
He'd be paying the same person who the Rambam claims is suing.
Doesn't deserve the money.
What?
That person doesn't deserve the money.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, Tzachi. Hold on a second. Hold on a second, Tzachi. I think you're asking the most fundamental question in the world about Edom Zomim. If two Edom testify that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 and they become Edom Zomim, what happens then?
They have to pay Shimon.
They have to pay Shimon $1,000. Did Shimon lose a penny?
Right.
He makes a profit of $1,000. So this is famous in the name of Reb Chaim. I mean, I don't even think you need Reb Chaim for this. The answer is that the whole Yesodas of Edom Zomim is that we imagine as if the Nidon had suffered what the Edom tried to meet out to the Nidon. You know, the whole story of Kasha Zomim is imaginary, meaning the end of the day is that the Nidon did not suffer that. That's called Kasha Zomim, hello Kasha Rosa. So for example, in Didi Mominis, we force the Edom to pay the Nidon all the money that he would have stood to lose, but he never lost. And in this case, the Nidon would have lost a heck of a lot of money because he would be sued by every Yankel Beryl who gave him Truma over the last 20 years.
I'm really not worried about the tax actors should know anybody else. It's just the amount that he would have had to pay plus the other guy.
Correct. The amount that he would have paid. So that all the Ramban's cheshbonis here about La Baria Zeka and so that only works La Hava. It's not going to help Lisha Avar for all the Truma that was eaten until this point. But then the Ramban comes up with another teretz. And this, I think, is really the most powerful teretz in the Ramban. The Ramban says the Chiddush of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is that when you have Ikar Ha'edus, and the tafel or the secondary segment of the Eidus, I'll explain in a minute, then it's a package deal. Do you remember we discussed this earlier tonight? What if I take one little, you know, we discussed those who say that the even if the Eidim were Yisraelim, maybe they would become chalolim in inverted commas, you know, in the sense that they would have beer with their wives and the wives. The Ramban says the following. The Ikar Eidus, meaning the thrust of the Eidus, is to establish chalos. Chalos is psul kahuna. Psul kahuna means that the Eidim no longer can function as kohanim. All the special kedushas kahuna that expresses itself in avoda and in achilas truma, all that is suspended, is disqualified. It's true, says the Ramban, there may be an element of ma'am here. But that element of mama is secondary. It's tafel. If the halacha of edim zomim vasisa wal kasher zomim is suspended with regard to the ikara edus, then we do not, in the chiddush of our Mishnah, of Ben Grusha, we do not impose upon the edim a kasher zomim on the secondary elements. Okay. Call them the what word am I looking for? The byproducts of the edus. There's the ikara edus, and there's the secondary element to the Eidus.
So what happens then to the Eidim Zomim?
So the Eidim Zomim, as we'll soon see, we didn't get to the punchline of today's Shia, the Eidim Zomim can get Malkus. Why? Because we cannot apply the principle of Kashrus Zomim in the literal boomerang way. But let me ask you the following question, Rabosai. How do you take this? Where do you take this? The Ramban is saying that there's something called an Ikara Eidus, and there's something called a byproduct, a secondary dimension of the Eidus. And I'm a little bit confused because I don't know in any particular case, I don't have the guidelines to determine what's considered the Ikar Eidus and what's the tough one. I'll give you an example. Two Eidim testify about an Ishus Ish that we saw this nus with another man. Can anybody tell me how you could smash this anus into two different parts? Do you follow what I'm looking for?
One side she's bustled to her husband, the other side she's quite beneath
it. Excellent. Yeah. So there's Tumas Znus, that's called the Soto, the Nitmes, that means she's Asur al Bailo. And there is the Onish Misa for Znus, Tuma, and Onish. And I ask myself the question, and maybe everyone sitting here in this room has an intuitive response to this question. I don't. I don't know where to go. I'm in the dark here. What is the Ikar Eidus? Is the Ikar Eidus that she's no longer allowed to live with her husband? Or is the Ikar Eidus that now we're going to take her out for capital punishment? And then Afghamin is going to be Shmuel. What happens if these Eidim become Eidim Zomim? Because if they're testifying on Misa, on a capital crime, so we have Allah of Asisim Lo Kasher Zom Lassel, so they'll get the exact punishment that they wanted to meet out to her. But if on the other hand, they were testifying on her that she's Asura Labaila, there's no way, no how, that you can impose that on the Eidim. Because there's no Tumah with regard to a husband. And Eidim, we're talking about males and not females. Not only that, maybe he's single and he doesn't even have a wife. So I don't want you to even entertain the idea, don't let it cross your mind, that we're going to take the Israel bylaw and superimpose it on the Eidim. That's impossible. Now what do you do in a case when you cannot apply Kashrus Zomim literally? So what's going to be always the fallback position, the default position is always Malkus. So what punishment do I mete out in the case of two Edim that testify on an Eishes Ishes insult? And I give you two choices. And they're fundamentally different. One is Misa and one is Malkus. I managed to know. What is that?
You got the trouble that regarding a person who doesn't mind somebody's highly, then Malkus the same.
No, but it's a kid like the means when you have an overlap of two crimes that are committed simultaneously. That's not my case. My case is you have an Iker Eidus and a Tophel Eidus. Because the Ramban is saying, let's get the Ramban's thesis. The Ramban is saying, not to deal with two crimes over here. There's only one issue that we're dealing with. The Eidim, who later become Zomimim, are testifying on X. There's a definite, well-inscribed Haggadahs Eidus, and we can define it. But the only thing is, what are the dinim that emanate as a result of that Haggadahs Eidus? And the Ramban says they split in two directions. On the one hand, the Kohen is disqualified for Kuhuna, that's called Chalolos. And on the other hand, the Kohen is going to suffer a tremendous financial loss for the 24 Matnas Kuhuna. Says the Ramban, I have a chiddush to you. That in laws of Kasha Zomam, we can define without blinking, the Iker Eidus is the Psul. And if in Hilchus Psul, we cannot transfer the Psul over to the Eidim, and the Gemara is going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out why not, but we cannot do so, and therefore the Kasha Zomam doesn't, the mechanics of Kasha Zomam cannot apply, says the Ramban, we're not going to do so as far as the moment is concerned. Why? Because that is a secondary repercussion of their Eidus. The thrust of their Eidus. That means the Iker HaGodas Eidus, says the Ramban, in a very abstract conceptual way, is Psul Kahuna. And that we can't impose on the Kohanim, on the Eidim. But what I'm just raising, just to raise this question and stimulate the mind, we could probably come up with a whole slew of cases of HaGodas Eidus where there are many different implications to a particular Haggadah. And I think what the Ramban's rule of thumb is going to be, that in each one of those cases that you can bifurcate the Eidus, you're going to always have to go back to the scoreboard and define for yourself what constitutes and qualifies as the Iker Eidus and what's the Tophel Eidus. And I don't know what rules are going to guide me through that labyrinth. It's very complicated. Okay. Let's now spend a few minutes reading through the Mishnah, because one thing we promised for tonight is that we'd at least finish the Mishnah and the first Tosfos. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Ein omrim yasezev ben grusho ben chalutza tachtov ela loke arboim. Now the Mishnah goes on to the second case. Me'idim onavish plonishu chayev liglos Ein omrim yiglezze tachtov Elo lokar boim. So what's the case of Golus, everyone?
Killed
the Shogun. Tosfos is going to have a whole discussion. How did the Eidim know that it was Shogun? An amazing, complicated issue. But for our purposes, he killed the Shogun. To the same extent, says the Mishnah, that you cannot apply Kasher Zomam literally to make the Eidim into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, so too, you cannot apply Hazama literally to make the Eidim go into Golus. Golus is the unique possession of a Horik V'Shogeg. These Eidim are guilty of a crime, but not of Harig V'Shogeg. Their crime is Losan Ebreach Eid Shoker. And for that crime, the punishment of Golus doesn't fit the crime. And therefore, once again, the fallback position, when we cannot impose Kasher Zomam literally,
Malkus.
Good. So Tosfos says, I don't understand something. Tema, Kevan diim huzmu enom nasim ben grusha ben chalutza, im ken gam bishalo yuzmu, ech yas al piim ben grusha, davi uames. Tosfos says that it's unquestionable that two Eidim can testify about someone that he's a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. And if there was no Hazam against them, that Eidus stands. Hachi hu emes. But how could it be so? Because these Eidim are not vulnerable to Hazam. Correct? V'havile Eidus she'iyat teyochel azima v'yein ze Eidus. The Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin that if the Eidim don't answer the various interrogations of Chakiros, the seven questions of Mokum and Zman, the whole Eidus goes overboard. We cannot accept such Eidim. Why? Because it's Eidu Shiyata Yochel Hazima. Says Tosus, if you're telling me that the process of Hazama could not apply in the case of Ben Grush Mechalutza, then how would you ever imagine two Eidim Sherim, who are telling the truth, who are testifying against somebody who's Ben Grush Mechalutza? Their Eidus, by definition, is an Eidu Shiyata Yochel Hazima. What a brilliant question of Tosus. I would have given him a PhD just for this question alone. Brilliant. So it comes out of Kohen Tosus Kasha, there are two ways in which you can establish Eidus as Eidus She'iyat HaYochel Hazim. It doesn't lend itself to Hazim. One is because they didn't give us enough information. They didn't answer the questions of Chakiris. The second way of doing it is because there's no process of Asisa Bo Kasha Zama. Why? Because you can't make the Eidim into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz. V'yesh Lomar. Kevan unto Lokim. Havi kasher zoma.
It's a substitute. Like the
zoma. In other words, there are two ways of fulfilling the kasher zoma.
Right.
There's the lechatchila way and there's the fallback way. But that also is kasher zoma. Havi shaper at yochel hazima. In balabatisha terms, in psychological terms, we would say the following: that the two eidim have to have a harta'a. How do you say in English a harta'a?
Deterrent.
A deterrent, excellent. Good. A deterrent. And what difference does it make whether the deterrent is this punishment or that punishment? If the Eidim are not subject to any deterrent whatsoever, there's no way that we can prove them false and establish any sort of punishment whatsoever. Scot-free, you know, it's carte blanche. I'm sitting in the driver's seat. Then what's going to prevent people, deter them from false testimony? Here we have very good deterrent. And that deterrent is Malchus. Nobody wants Malchus. I mean, that we'll find out later on in the Masech exactly what Malchus is. It's not pleasant.
So what was it having meant to be? So
not only Shmuel Dov, is your question relevant about what was the Havamin of Tosfos, but moreover, if you skip down about seven lines, because we're running out of time, Tosfos offers a second answer, which means he's not so happy with the first answer. No, you have to skip about 10 lines. The Odye Shlomar, if you find the frisbee of Rabbi Kivega on the left side of Tosfos, you'll know what I mean. The Odye Shlomar, the Gabi Edus, the Ben Grusha, Chalutza, Lochai Shin, and Klal, Beata Yochel Hazima. The Havamin of Tosfos is correct, according to the second answer. And there is no Kasher Zomam. There is no fulfillment of Asisim Lo Kasher Zomam, but we don't need it. Why don't we need it? He says, the Mehecha Nafkon, from whence do we derive the Be'ina that we require Eidu Shati Yochel Hazima? Mi Kasher Zomam. For Muchach B'Gemar, the Kasher Zomam Lo Nichtav, Legabi Eidus to Ben Grusha, Velo Koi Klal Ale, B'Shum Tzad Sheba Olam. Tosfos says that the whole requirement of Eidus Shati Yochel Hazima comes from the Parsha of Asisa Lo Kasher Zomam. But Eidus Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz is not written in that Parsha. Because the Gemara is going to darshin vasisim lo v'lo lazaro. So once the Torah excluded Eidus ben Grusha ben Chalutza from the parsha of Kasher Zomam, you no longer require Eidus Shati Yochel Hazima. This is an unbelievable chiddush of Tosfos. Tosfos is saying that the requirement of Yochel Hazima is not universal. It's not absolute. It lends itself to exceptions. Meaning, whenever the halach of Kasher Zomam cannot be applied, because the Torah places a certain miut in the parsha to the exclusion of case X, case Y, then those cases set up a category of eidios which stand on their own two feet without Hazomah. Brilliant! So again, to come back to Shmuel Dov's question, it seems that Tosfos is not so sure that Malchus is an adequate substitute for Hazomah. Meaning that Malchus, according to Tosfos, I'm going back to the Havmin of Tosfos and the second answer of Tosfos, Malchus comes from a whole different source. It's not related to the parasha of Kashasam. We have to understand what that means.
It is. Why shouldn't it be? I can't do this, so at least I have an alternative and I give the Malchus.
So according to the first Teretz of Tosfos, you're 100% correct. The alternative is a substitute for the literal approach to Kashasam. But according to the second Teretz of Tosfos, there is no Kashasam here.
No.
Nusa, how does the Eidus work? We don't require Kasher Zomam.
I have to have something.
All right, we'll talk about it after the Shia. I just want to add one piece and then I'll let you go. And then we'll talk after the Shia. Is that all right? The Noda Yehuda, who's maybe the most brilliant Ashkenazic mind we had in the last three centuries, says the following. There's an unbelievable nafkamina between the two answers of Tosfos. what happens if the Edim cannot answer the questions of the Chakiris? According to the first answer, Tosis, do we need Kasher Zomim in Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? The answer is yes. Do we have Kasher Zomim? The answer is yes. Therefore, if we need Eide Shatiochel Azima, if the Eide Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza have no adequate answers to the questions of Makom and Zman or the Chakiris, the Eide is Eide Shatiochel Azima, and it's out the window. It cannot stand on its own 2 feet. But according to the second Teret, says the Nod of Yehuda, even if the Eide Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza did not have meticulous answers to the questions of the Chakiris, and therefore there's no possibility of Hazama, the Eide still stands. As long as they say, we know so-and-so is Ben Grusha, when did it happen, when do we see, when was the get, they start fumfering, they don't know, the Eide is acceptable. Why? Because the Gemara says, Sanhedrin, why is it that they have to answer all the questions of the Chakir is a Makom Zman, because otherwise the Eidus doesn't lend itself to what? Hazoma. Tosa says in the second answer, you don't need Hazoma, and there is no Parsha of Hazoma with regard to Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. You like it? I don't like it at all. And Baruch Hashem, the Beis HaLevi doesn't like it either. Says the Beis HaLevi, to know the view that missed a very important point. And with this we'll conclude the Shia. There are two dimensions to Hazoma. The first dimension to Hazoma is that we believe the second pair of Edim, that the first pair of Edim are lying, that their Edus is Edus Sheker. The second dimension of the Parsha is the Kasher Zomam, to punish the Edim exactly in the boomerang theory. Says the Beis HaLevi, what Tosis means in his second Teretz is with regard to Ben Grusha and Chalutza, that Edus doesn't need the second dimension of Kasher Zomam. Namely, it doesn't have to lend itself to the punishment that fits the crime. But Chas V'Shalom, to say that the Edim don't have to answer the questions of Makom and Zman, for sure the Edus has to lend itself to Hazom. It doesn't have a question that. The very essence, the very kishkas of Edus is to answer the question of Makom and Zman so that we can test you and see whether or not your Edus stands, or maybe it falls because two Edim are going to say Imanu Yisam. True, we don't need Hazom as far as the onesh of Hazom is concerned. That's the chiddush of the second Teretz. But as far as the process of Hazoma, namely the Imanu Yisam, to disqualify their Edus and establish them as Edus Sheker, that for sure we certainly need. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. Mitz Hashem, we'll pick it up next week. Yeah, your question. No. I just didn't. I want to keep to my allotted time.
It was interesting on the Rambam has the criteria to make the liability for the coin that he has to return within 2 weeks. The one has to be measured, it needs to be measurable. The second is that it needs to be
Badai.
And the third was that it needs to be not ground, it needs to be miscontrolled. Right?
So these are the
characteristics which the International Board of Accounting uses as the framework to determine liability.
The three criteria of what?
That the International Framework of Accounting uses to determine a liability. It doesn't have
really? Could you get that in a send me my email if you can. I love those things. I integrate into what you do. That's what we call them. Why you call them not?
Rav, why are you going to come up with the Ravina going on the actual Peshat HaMatzah? It could be the point of the Ravina is actually on the Onish itself. So that stems from the Onish. If you look at what stems from the Onish, then that will answer the question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, you know, onshim, yeah. and the two onshim is now, okay, what do we do?
Two onshim for the same crime?
Yeah, for the exact same crime, and that would bring on
the onshim. I think that's Kimlei Ramine. I think, that if I remember correctly, Kimlei Ramine, right, the best case of Kimlei Ramine is that while he's violating Melechus Hotzah, Zrika, he's also ripping someone Shirayim, so he's got a Chiv Misa for Chil Shabbos, and a Chiv Mamun for but the two different averus that coincide in one mice. One zrika entails two different averus. But what's more important to me is that you understand the conceptual problem. The Ramban is getting us into a very difficult, I call it a sticky kind of problem here. I remember when I was in South Africa, there was a kind of fruit, I forgot what it's called sticky figs or something like that. Yeah. No, maybe only in Cape Town. Are you South African?
I'm South African. I've traveled the whole South Africa.
Yeah. Anyway, next time I'm in South Africa, I'll ask Leah to give me a. She gave us a sticky fig. Anyway, this Ramban is really sticky. Why? That's Taki. You know Taki? Yeah. Thank you so much. Why is it sticky? Because the Ramban is saying that the laws of Kasha Zomam apply to an edus which bifurcates, I call it. It splits into two directions. Only as far as the Ikar. The Tafel doesn't play any role. It gets somehow swallowed up. And therefore, if we don't have the Kasha Zom on the Ikar Eidus, namely the Psukah, then we don't apply the Kasha Zom to the monetary laws, because that's secondary. But I'm just saying that opens up a can of worms. Because in so many cases that come to mind, I don't know which is the Ikar and which is the Tafel. For example, if I testify that Reuben stole from Shimon. Now, it turns out that Reuven, the so-called Gazlan, will get sold as an Eved Ivri if he doesn't have the money to pay. So ask yourself the question, what was the Ikar Eidus? Did I testify on the $100 that he stole, or did I testify that he should be sold as an Eved because he has no money in his bank account? Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this goes on and on and on, because you testify in an action on a situation, and it has many repercussions. Yeah. That's good. Thanks so much. We have your email in case...
Facebook.
Well, whatever, you write something, because just in case there's a change in schedule, I would be so embarrassed.
I also don't know if I can commit to the Shirbet class.
No, I'm not asking for a commitment. This is not a legal document. Yeah, here's a pen. You gentlemen with me, or you have to you have a minute?
We're talking about mamzer, whether the angel can become a mamzer. You spoke about the shavuot thing. Why does, if somebody gives aids, does aids is so strong it turns him into a mamzer? It takes really, that's a busy straw.
Right.
Mamzer is yichus.
Right. Is he a real mamzer? We treat him like a mamzer.
So Shabbat Tzivos seems to be unnecessary. You just say he can't marry mamzeres because
he's not really a mamzer.
That's a bizarre.
Right. But the question is, who can he marry? And the only thing we came up with was a Gioris. But in that sense, he's in worse shape than the Edom themselves. But I remember, and now I'm trying to... I don't remember who it is, but one of the Mepharshim says he can't even marry a Gioris, which doesn't make sense.
The question is...
Let me...
The question would be whether or not it's the concept of Vlad or Kodesh Be'omid. So he's not Kodesh Be'omid because he was born in Be'kashos.
Uh-huh.
Whether or not the Isra is Derban and Deraisa.
Well, to marry Gioris?
Whether or not the moms are allowed to marry and say Shifra.
Right.
Because whether or not it's a Derbal and Deraisa, which is Kaddish Be'omid, or if it's...
you mean Nafgimino, whether we can encourage him to marry a Shifra?
No, Nafgimino over here, because these Edom's own being were Kaddish Be'omid. They never had a Psul in their being.
They were told.
They were born Kaddish people. Now, because Hazama comes along.
Right.
So
I'm not sure exactly why this should make any difference. Can you wait a minute?
Yeah, no,
I'll just say, we'll talk about tomorrow, whatever's good for you. All right, so you may come or not, depending on the hullabaloo that's going on.
I don't fail to let me cross the road.
Right. I'm sleeping over here tonight for that very reason.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's
good. Yeah,
does the Rav have any interest in giving over Shira in more philosophical things?
Yeah, I'd love to if there's a need for it, if there's an interest.
Something more advanced, something like a Chokhmat Emet, something,
I don't have that much of a yad in Tanya, for example, Likutei Torah. But what I could do, if anyone's interested, the Rav of Salvation has a lot of philosophical writings. We could have a few lectures, like a series on Halachic Man, if you're familiar. But that's, I don't know if you'd call that a Chokhmat Emet.